Blog Talk Radio.
September 21st, 2021. And this is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening? And tonight, part of our discussion will deal with the question, is education of American people possible? I.e., Del Rio, Texas. And so, without further ado, we will start off with our usual pundit, Ralph Pointer. What's happening?
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. We know the date and we know the time, but what's happening is a question mark. Our program this evening is, can the American people be educated? That is, can we learn from our history and do something about it? Well, we have to examine that. Our job as people of conscience is to agitate, educate, and organize. Now, we can agitate, certainly enough. There has been agitation in the streets. Black Lives Matter was certainly agitation. And before that, it was the civil rights movement. That was certainly agitation. And before that, it was the struggle against lynching. That was agitation. Before that, we had the Civil War in America. That was certainly agitation. And before that, we had the abolitionist movement, the movement to abolish slavery. That was certainly agitation. And here we are today. And what have we, the people, learned from all of that? We see somebody like Mr. Trump. It matters not what he says, as long as he says, nigger, nigger first. Just like all of the racist, backward politicians of America have done for generations. That's enough. That gets you elected. The Strom Thurmonds, the reactionaries in Congress today. People have not noticed that it doesn't do them any good. We had the fantastic union movement in America. And now we're down to less than 10% of union members. That was a great education. Or maybe it's because they've been able to shut out. The corporate media has been able to shut out all of this history through entertainment. They put that box in our apartments. No, we buy that box and put it in our apartments. And I remember as early as 1964, talking to Queen Mother Moore, when she says, Ralph, if we could get everybody in Harlem on Saturday night to throw their televisions out the window, by Monday morning, the government would have new televisions for everyone for free, because they need that ignorant box to destroy the memory of the people. I didn't think that was true then, but now I know it was true, because that little ignorant box that people run out and pay their good money for is the most successful instrument of blinding the eyes of people's minds in history. We have forgotten everything. We know nothing. We can learn nothing because we know nothing, and we're not interested in learning anything of value because we have that ignorant box. For example, today, can we learn? Can people of color learn? With all of that, day after day, they can't hide it. New things come up. Haitian immigration. Del Rio, Texas. Horses, men on horseback, whipping black immigrants. Did we not notice the difference between the treatment of white or immigrants who want to be white from Cuba as opposed to Haitian immigrants? Twice. Every time. I could go on and on and on. It's not the first time it's happened. Did we learn from the first time? Answer, no. Hunger in America, the richest country in the world. We have people food insecurity. Have we learned that we have to change the system? Deportations on border crossings. They're not even making pretend. They have the planes. They're sending people back immediately. No problem. We saw the exodus in Afghanistan. We're going to out-exodus Afghanistan in Del Rio, Texas. We see that they closed the American system of application for immigrants. You can't apply any longer. That's against the Constitution. We didn't write it. They wrote it. It goes on and on. Abortion, the people fought for abortion rights, and in Texas, they're taking it back. Global warming, need I say any more? Vaccine distribution, how far can we go on that? Vaccines themselves. And we're talking about, and we try to agitate, educate, and we see the organization comes after people have been educated. And our question is, can the American people ever be educated? What must be done to educate the American people? Right across the river in Newark, New Jersey, we have water poisoning of the children. On the list now started with Benton Harbor, and it probably went wider than that. Started with Flint, Michigan, and now it's back to Benton Harbor, which Reverend Pinckney talked about it before it happened in Flint. Did you know that the Benton Harbor water system 20 years ago was the best water system probably in the Northeast? Fresh, pure water. And then they started taking it back. Whirlpool started taking the water and not paying their bill. Then they took over the government of Benton Harbor because they said Benton Harbor couldn't pay their debt. Well, fiscal emergency managers. And who told us? Reverend Pinckney said, everybody look up what they're going to do. And he says they trained 67 of them. And as Reverend Pinckney said, they didn't need 67 for Benton Harbor, but that was the first. And they forgave Whirlpool all of their debt, their water debt, that's the Whirlpool Corporation. And then they said Benton Harbor was bankrupt, and they needed somebody to manage their money. Well, all they had to do was get their water bill paid by Whirlpool, who was getting the water free, was digging canals for free for their big boats and corporate wealth, the corporate playground up there in Benton Harbor. And they started with fiscal emergency managers. We learned nothing. And then you know the story from there, Flint, et cetera. And so here we are, and the question is education of the American people possible? Well, I could go on and on with that, and I will go on and on with that, but we're going to have other people tune in. Tell us what they think. And along with the program, along with the discussion, along with the questions that we're going to ask, we're going to start it off in the name of dear, recently departed Sister Lynn, who loved poetry. We're back with the great poet Nzinga, who's been showing herself more and more recently. And maybe the poet is going to say it in a way only a poet can say it, and maybe we'll get a little bit of education. I will be listening in to get educated. Sister Nzinga, the microphone is yours.
Okay, good evening. Good evening, Sister Betty. Brother Poynter, thank you so much for having me back again. It's a pleasure. So the poem, and I'm going to be long because I know it's a lot of speakers on. But what I'm going to read tonight, it was inspired by, I wrote it a couple of years ago, but it was inspired by the recent passage of Juneteenth. So, you know, and I just found it so ironic that people found that them, quote, giving, quote, us Juneteenth as a holiday, they felt was a big thing. Anyway, the name of the poem is called My Liberty. The Emancipation Proclamation was never a declaration of my liberation. The entire embodiment of that written document was designed for the perpetration of subjugation and domination of my people in this America nation. I had always considered it ill of me to conceive that freedom for me could ever equate to true liberty. In this nation, that could never be. But I am much more than the embodiment of some white man's written document. There is so much more to me than my skin, you see, because I descended from dynasties, bloodline of prominency, where we ruled as kings and queens. So I am so much more than your eyes can see, and there is so much more that remains to be seen. Yes, I must confess, the Emancipation Proclamation did little to keep me from being oppressed, did nothing but hinder my progress and everything to prevent me from gaining access. Yet, with your foot on my back and your knee on my neck, refuse to let you stop me from achieving my success. And the day will come when you will give me my due respect. No, the Emancipation Proclamation was never intended for my liberation, but my liberty emanates from the Most High, you see. So I was born free, and I refuse to allow anyone to limit or inhibit the manifestation of my true purpose or my liberation. And that, to me, is the true meaning of my liberty. Hello?
Just want to say, Sister Nzinga is not just an politician. She is an activist, and she is a real advocate for our political prisoners. And her poems at the Rising Together protest in Foley Square Park, Tom Paine Park, Sunday, were just amazing. And we really do appreciate her because she's also the main prime mover and shaker for the African Burial Ground in Brooklyn. And we thank you, Sister Nzinga. Without further ado, we have another advocate for our political prisoners, our Jericho, New York representative, Sister Ann Lamb, and we hope she'll give everybody the heads up with regard to the upcoming tribunal that's going to be held soon in this country. Yes. Ann Lamb, your mic is open. And again, Sister Nzinga, thank you. And since that poem was too short, we may have to call you back to do another one.
I wanted to do one for the sister that transitioned. I was thinking about, I had something that I wanted to, like, kind of dedicate to her.
Well, then we'll try and do it at the end of the program if you hang in there with me.
Thank you. Time. Okay, you're welcome.
Sure. Okay, Anne, please, educate us.
Well, thank you so much, Sister Betty. And thank you, Sister Nzinga, for the poem. It was really beautiful. Love to hear another one. Let's see. Well, we can start out today by saying that 20 years ago today, our dear sister friend, Ana Belén Montes, was arrested. So that's an anniversary today of Ana Belén Montes being at FMC Carswell, where she has been convicted of the crime of espionage because she followed her conscience. She was working with, you know, some high government agency here, and she was stationed in Cuba, and she felt like what the United States was doing was wrong. And so she spoke out about it to the Cubans and got herself in a mess of trouble, right? But I just want to remind people that that is a very heroic person, and she has been in prison for 20 years as of today because she chose to protect Cuba's right to sovereignty and self-determination and not abide by the U.S. government's campaign to destroy the Cuban Revolution. So that's a very important event to remember. And as people probably know, our friend David Gilbert has either gone to the parole board or is about to go to the parole board at some point early this week. I would assume he probably went today, but since DOCS has not officially posted his parole hearing for some reason known only to themselves, we'll have to wait to hear from him. But keep him in your prayers because it would be great if he were granted parole. As I say, it's very interesting because of those 10 people that Cuomo granted quote-unquote clemency or whatever you want to call it at the last minute, The other nine people do not have to go to the parole board. Only David has to go to the parole board. Okay? So, you know, his was a different, you know, there was a hook in his. So that has probably happened. I have not heard any updates yet. I'd like to know even how it went, but so keep David in your thoughts and in your prayers. And there was all kinds of things to do if people don't know. Dr. Mitul Shakur has a clemency petition going to the Biden administration. If you go to MitulShakur.com, you can sign on to that petition. You can also find it on JerichoNY.org. Just click on the link. Please add your name. Very important. Leonard Peltier is doing the same thing. Go to whoisleonardpeltier.info. Look for that petition as well. Sign your name. These brothers have been inside for a long, long, long time, and it is past time for them to come home. Those two men in particular, Leonard and Mitulu, are not in good physical shape. Leonard's in better physical shape than Mitulu, who has stage 4 bone marrow cancer and is in constant pain and was already denied compassionate release, I believe, twice. So, you know, we can see, you know, what the system is all about. We know they have no compassion. The whole coalition around Maroon has been working hard. There will be an appeal of that denial of medical transfer to hospice care, maybe toward the end of this month, more possibly in October. So there will be stuff to do around that. We will have some petitions for people to sign, letters for people to sign on. They're almost ready to roll. I was reading the notes from the last meeting because I could not attend. They should be out very soon. So as soon as those online things are out, I will post them around, and I would encourage everybody to please add your name so that we can get Maroon home so that he can be with his family and surrounded by love as, you know, as he prepares to make his transition, which may not be as soon as we think, right? So, but that's important. And our political prisoners are very important, and we will talk about the Spirit of Mandela International Tribunal, which is coming up beginning on October 22nd, which is actually a cultural evening. The tribunal itself will begin on Saturday the 23rd in the morning, probably at 9 a.m., I would assume, and we'll be going all day Saturday and all day Sunday. And then on Monday the 25th, there'll be a press conference somewhere in the area of the UN where the jurists will be, you know, presenting their indictment, which should not be hard to do. So we are charging various things, which are short, so I can read them to you. Racist police killings of black, brown, and indigenous people. Hyper-incarceration of black, brown, and indigenous people, which includes and amounts to the continued practice of legally sanctioned slavery. Political incarceration of civil rights, national liberation era revolutionaries and activists, as well as present-day activists. Environmental racism and its impact on black, brown, and indigenous people. Public health racism and disparities and its traumatic impact on black, brown, and indigenous people, and genocide of black, brown, and indigenous people based on the above historic and systemic charges. So that is basically what we're charging. We have outcomes for this. I don't want to take too much time because I know there probably are a lot of people who want to speak tonight. But you can go to spiritofmandela.org. You can register. We were hoping to have a little bit of an actual presence, which will be at the Shabazz Center on 165th and Broadway. But due to COVID restrictions, that is an extremely limited audience. Max number of people who can be there are 100. You know, you have to have proof of your vaccination. We'll be wearing masks all day and social distancing, of course, because we'll be inside. So you can also, you know, we'll also be live streaming and Zooming. So, you know, you have the option if you fill out the registration form that you can say, oh, I'm going to watch it on Zoom or however, or I'm planning to attend. So that's very important and for people to do that. This is a very historic event. I was just actually watching the fifth webinar, which I got off of to join this program, where wonderful people were talking, this Native woman named Agnes. She started it off. She was incredible with her history. And so I had to leave in the middle because it gets going on till 9:30. And I'm not to worry because I know it's being recorded, so I can watch it at another time. Everybody else can watch it, too, at another time. We will be posting. We have already done 4 webinars. We have an interview with Brother Sacred Odinga. We have a couple of other pieces. We're in the process of putting everything up on YouTube and Vimeo. But if you go to JerichoNY.org, you will find the links to all of these down on the left-hand side of the page. So if you don't know anything about Spirit of Mandela, check out the website, you know, spiritofmandela.org, or go to JerichoNY.org, where you can find links to all the previous webinars we have done and the interview with Brother Sekou. And we would look forward to having as many people as possible participating in this. We have some people from other parts of the country that are already planning viewing parties. A group of folk in Indianapolis are doing that. Also people in California. Also we have a bunch of comrades in Canada who have been doing tremendous work around this. So very important. And really, people, I agree with what you were saying before, Ralph, to a certain extent, as we seem to learn nothing. But we have to keep trying because that is our job. We are trying to educate. We are trying to organize. We are trying to get rid of this horrible imperialistic capitalist system, which is killing people every day. And we know about the horrible thing with the Haitian immigrants. It is so disgusting to see those images, not surprising, but disgusting, because it is well known that a lot of those Border Patrol people are white supremacists. And so if they have a chance to run down, you know, black and brown people with their horses and whip them and often shoot them as well, this is not surprising. It's totally disgusting. It's totally wrong, but not surprising. So, you know, we have a lot of work to do, folks. So let's get busy and pick up the work, as Sister Safiya Bukhari always said. So what's
well,
the
thank
call?
You.
Free them all. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that, Ann. And what I think that we have to do, just to familiarize ourselves with our dear brothers and sisters in the death camps who gave it up, gave it all for us, just go to the Jericho website and just go down the list of the names. Be familiar with the names. When you hear Anna Boleyn Montez, you know all about it because you went to the website. And so just a couple of names each day. Go to the website and read their names and read the wonderful work they did for freedom. And then you begin your work by learning their names. Thank you again, my brothers.
You could take up one more thing as long as you're reading their names. Write them a letter.
That's the second step. Write them a letter. Thank you again, Ann Lamb.
I was also going to add, the third thing, if not the first thing, is to make a donation.
Very important. We say it. You know, we have to put our money where our mouth is. And making a donation is a wonderful contribution. But let's go to the website and let's go to the rest of the people on the program. Sister Betty.
Brother Higgins. Higgins, your mic is open. Thank you for coming back. Missed you.
Thank you for this opportunity. I'd like to share with our audience some excerpts from a book published in 2012 entitled The Classroom and the Cell, Conversations on Black Life in America, featuring Mumia Abu-Jamal and Mark Lamont Hill. And this is in reference to the charter school movement. The charter school movement does nothing but allow profiteers to chip away at public schools. When I hear all this glorification of charter schools, it makes me think of the continuing rebellion against Brown. I'll tell you why. If you listen to the voices of real, deep, right-wing antipathy to public schools, they don't say public schools, they say government schools. As if the government has no role in educating its citizens, and as if this whole enterprise should be a private function. Charter schools reach perhaps 6% of the nation's kids. F the hype. They certainly ain't no answer to the millions of kids, black, brown, and white, who need and deserve a quality education. And Mark responds to Mumia's comment, Right. At their best, charter schools are laboratories of innovations whose insights can be brought back to the traditional public schools for the good of everyone. In the current moment, however, they become sites of economic exploitation and political opportunism. Corporate honchos are taking advantage of the new markets tax credit, which gives federal tax breaks for new charter school construction. Once the buildings are built, they are rented out to public school districts at exorbitant rates. So like prisons, charter schools become a cottage industries whose raison d'etre is economic rather than educative. On top of that, the educational value of these institutions is grossly overstated. Of course, some charter schools do really well, and they should. After all, they put their thumbs on the scale. They have the ability to reject students and emotional and learning disabilities. They can kick students out kick students out with ease. Also, there's a creaming effect, where the strongest students and most active parents are going to get their children out of struggling schools and send them to the shiny new charter school. Still, despite these advantages, only 17% of charter schools outperform public schools academically. The bigger issue is that while they fetishize charter schools, many school reformers offer no solutions for the majority of students who are forced to remain in second-class schools. And this puts parents in a tough position. They want to do right by their kids and give them all the opportunities available, so many of them end up supporting charter schools. That's because they feel like they have no other choice. They're unhappy with the current schools, and charter schools at least give the illusion of choice, even if they're choosing between two equally undesirable options. As you said, parents want their kids to get highly educated. It's interesting that we didn't have this kind of discussion 40 or 50 years ago, when public education seemed to at least serve the children of European immigrants far more than, say, Latino immigrants or Native Americans or blacks. The whole dialogue has changed because this used to be seen as a system that lifted people up, that put them on the same fundamental level with everyone else by giving them the basics. This was a requirement almost for citizenship. Now urban schools are precursors to prison. Marion Wright Edelman talks about these schools where they really inculcate prison culture in children so that they feel comfortable going from PS 103 into Rikers Island. And I want to end that reading with a comment by Paul Robeson. He says, the battlefront is everywhere. There is no protected rear. Thank you.
Thank you. And give us the name of that book again. I think so many people should read it.
Yes, The Classroom and the Cell, Conversations on Black Life in America by Mumia Abu-Jamal and Mark Lamont Hill.
Please remember that, folks, and read it yourself and be able to quote from it when you're before parents. We did have this discussion. There was a movement in the 60s called Community Control Movement. It was about the whole ball of wax of education. Was fought mainly New York. School budget was $20 billion a year. That money, population was 70% black. Found that money to be distributed in terms of contracts in the black community so that we could have a boot to lift ourselves up by our bootstraps. But the government and many of the organizations saw what was happening with that movement, what possibly could happen, and they did what they generally do, what they do in a colony, is they buy the movement. Poverty pimps were everywhere. And as they Negroized the struggle in New York, Negroized the struggle in America, and I'm using that as in a negative term, they Negroized the struggle in South Africa. They bought us. we took the money and went home. Of course, I didn't take the money and go home. I fought it, and I ended up in Rikers Island and out of work forever in terms of the school system. And so conversations on the education must be read. You must understand what that's about. It's about the dollar, and instead of the dollars going to the communities to help us lift ourselves up economically, it goes to the corporations. Remember that. That's what it's supposed to do, as Queen Mother Moore said over and over again. The school systems are doing their job. They're keeping us ignorant. Sister Betty.
Those of you who remember the history of the struggle for community control in Harlem will remember that Ralph organized and put in the first black principal and the first Latino principal, four of the black and brown principals in this city. And for that, he did end up in Rikers. But worse than that, they took his livelihood, and they deprived our community of a wonderful educator. I would like to also acknowledge the Jericho listserv and website. New York City Jericho, under Ann Lamb's leadership, is always putting out valuable information about what's going on with the police state in this country. There is absolutely no excuse for not being educated as to what's happening in the prisons and what's happening with the laws that are coming down that impact your freedom. So we are, this program is about education. And Brother Henry, I can't thank you enough for that oracle and that essay, that oral essay. I hope you have some more that you're going to share with us. That was fabulous. I want to now continue to introduce Joel, he was next in the list of callers. Joel, your mic is open.
Yes, hello.
Educate us, Joel. Yes, we hear you.
Okay, well, I see that Biden spoke at the UN today, and we could see that he's not deviating at all from the aggressive course of imperialism. In fact, he seems to be heating it up more than in the Trump era. And in fact, that was a big part of his platform, that Trump was supposedly soft on Russia and China. So we're getting what we expect, and this is also coupled with gigantic war games again in the, this was a few weeks ago, both in the northern Baltic Sea and in the South China Sea. It looks like they're definitely moving in that direction, which is what we could expect from this system, unless there's gigantic opposition and pressure from the bottom for against aggressive war and also against the capitalist imperialist system, which is the basis for the United States addiction to war over the centuries, and especially during the last 100 years. I think people have to reflect now about what has supposedly been won by the election of Biden, and we have to come out of the doldrums, and we have to wake up that it's time to begin the campaign to put the pressure on the Biden administration and to begin a solidarity movement that can think in terms of actual revolution rather than voting for the supposed lesser of two evils. They all seem to be lesser as time progresses. Each one seems to be worse than the one before. But the again, the answer is that there's got to be a very strong resistance movement against the Biden administration at every turn, because it's war games in the Baltic and in the South China Sea were written up by the media in a way that I've never seen before. They squarely called them preparations for World War III. And I've never seen the war games written up in that way. And it really does seem that that this administration is heading more rapidly in that direction than the Trump administration. But again, there has to be the kind of pressure and exceeding the kind of pressure that helped force the United States to back off from the Vietnam War. And this has to be a pressure from the people within the United States, as well as in solidarity with the people of the rest of the world who are targeted. So a major part of that is the campaign for the political prisoners, because many of the political prisoners were part of the wars against oppressed peoples in the United States, but also prisoners that are still in prison for opposing equally the wars against the rest of the world waged by this country, always in the name, of course, of things like democracy and even peace. It's a war for peace. So that's basically what I want to call people's attention to. I think that even though there were subtleties in the talk and it was delivered in a toned-down manner, if you look carefully, it amounted to a declaration of the intent to commit war against the rest of the world. And we can only see what happened in the Afghanistan debacle, where supposedly the Taliban is presented as the bad guys and so on, but these were all created in the U.S. As part of the U.S. war drive, especially in response to the fact that a modernist, pro-socialist government had formed in Afghanistan, and the Carter administration at that time, this is not 20 years ago, but 40 years ago, decided to interfere in the internal affairs of Afghanistan by building up a right-wing movement largely based on fanning up religious fanaticism against the among the property owners in Afghanistan against the modernistic and socialistic forces that had taken over, and especially against the fact that in response to the CIA's attempt to overthrow that, the Soviet Union, it still was the Soviet Union at that time, intervened in an attempt to keep modernistic and socialistic experiment alive in Afghanistan. Now it's presented very often as if Afghanistan had always been governed by religious fanatics such as the Taliban, but actually it was a recent development created by the U.S. itself, which turned on the U.S. Later on and kept the U.S. busy in a war for 20 years, and it was forced to withdraw. So all the hypocrisy about the U.S. Fighting the Taliban for a more modernistic approach is actually stood on its head. Be aware that the it's a very good sign, however, that the U.S. was driven out, and it shows that they no longer have this ability to just take over one country after another, that they can be defeated and will be defeated, and this should add to the optimism of a people's victory that can fuel the beginning of the resistance movement around the world to further war.
Well, thank you so much for that, Joel. It is very important that we understand the history of Afghanistan and empires. Afghanistan was known as the burial ground of empires. But arrogant Americans felt that it didn't mean anything when you were talking about Americans, the same as they felt that it didn't mean anything when you were talking about Americans in Vietnam. People are rising up. Go ahead, Joel.
All the way to Alexander the Great. It's the third rail of many imperialist ambitions of many different types and phases of imperialism up until the current one, which is the last stage of capitalism. And it's been the third rail that not only were those who tried to take over there defeated and thrown out, but the consequences went all the way back to the country that tried to take over, and even in the United States, we could see the impact at home, and the lesson that the American people, although not the American ruling class, is learning as a result.
Well, thank you for that, Joel, and the implications, the ramifications of this war are the young men and women who went to fight it who were believers of the lie, and now they are here at a great government, and the American government isn't taking care of them anywhere near to the degree to which they should be, and they've gone to the people to ask people to support wounded warriors. We should make the corporations take care of that, because that's what the war was fought over. Next up is our wonderful speaker, Sister Betty.
Okay, we've extended the time because we've got three extremely important reports that have yet to be heard. We've got Brother Zul, who has done an incredible job of organizing a Rising Together movement in the Lower Manhattan, Foley Square, and we've got to hear a report on Haiti from the point of view of the Haitian people themselves, Brother Daoud, and I hope he will also make a big announcement about his program, which is the latest addition to WBAI programming. But before we do that, we have Sister Nellie Bailey, who is always welcome because she, like the rest of you, knows how to educate. Sister Nellie Bailey, your mic is open. And Joel, thank you so much for that analysis.
Thank you, Sister Betty. I'd like to pick up on the thread of Joel, the background to Biden's speech at the UN. The warlords and the imperialists, the international imperialists, have had a falling out. The U.S. undercut France for a deal of nuclear-powered submarines that France had worked out with Australia. It is a $100 billion deal. The U.S. came in, undercut France, and has formed a trilateral collaboration with Australia, England, and, of course, the U.S. The U.S. war policy is being driven by the military, by the warlords. This $100 billion deal, of course, will escalate tensions with China because it will be in the South China Sea. Also, we have to look at the what is happening economically, and this is something that I talked to Brother Ralph about. It was just announced that that China itself is in deep trouble. Its real estate industry has collapsed, and I understand that its construction and real estate constitutes about 25% of China's GDP. But unlike the U.S., the Chinese, on average, the average citizen saves 10% of its income. So the collapse of the real estate industry, I think, is going to have very definitely a global impact. But in China itself, they're dealing with cash, unlike the U.S., which is a debtor's nation. Mm-hmm. That's number one. But I think Joel's point, if may I have two more minutes, please?
Certainly.
I think Joel's point about how we are moving toward war, the alarm has been sounded by many, including the wonderful John Pilger, who has a documentary on the coming war with China. And I think that's very important for people to understand that the Biden administration is 10 times worse than the Trump administration in terms of U.S. empire and the movement toward war, which is really, really very, very serious. Secondly, with respect to the real estate collapse in China, because that's what it really is. I mean, when you have it constituting 25% of GDP, that is pretty serious. But I think that China will recover, and we have to remember that the U.S. is placing itself in an even worse position with its so-called European allies, and we have to remember the pipeline that Russia built. It is now completed to Germany, bypassing Ukraine, desperate to get into the EU, and I think we all know what that means. But things are falling apart among these imperial rivals. Whether it's the U.S. or France, nuclear-powered submarines, and I understand it's 12 of them, in the South China Sea, escalates tension with China, and China isn't going to take this lying down. Also, the U.S. and its failed policy of promoting democracy is a joke, an extremely bad joke. The recent murder of 10 Afghanistan people, including 7 children, is only a part of the big lie that is being fed to the American public every day. And secondly, I want to address the issue of the pandemic and the worldwide movement against the lockdown, against mandated vaccine. And of course, recently we have seen here in this country that Dr. Head of the Dr. Fauci is in fact cut down by the FDA as he pushed the booster vaccine. It is just incredible because they are looking to make billions and billions more of money off the backs of the people. But there is a worldwide movement that we should be cognizant of. If we look at the footage from Australia, from France, from Germany, people are hitting the streets in the thousands and thousands and thousands, and those numbers are growing. Right here in New York City, less than 2 weeks ago, 5,000 people assembled in the park behind City Hall. That was a lot of people, and it is growing. The protest against the mandated vaccine, BAI, who is pushing this mandated vaccine, is going to be left in the dust. And I like to say this about WBAI in terms of white ethnic chauvinism. Black people are allowed some time and somewhat of a birth on Saturday, a wide berth on Saturdays. But if you listen to that radio station, it is ethnic chauvinism, and I will be generous here and not call it racism, because it is one white host after another. And this brings me to my third point and my closing argument. We must guard against those people, those forces, and here in New York City, these Trotskyite forces who speak for us because of their ethnic chauvinism, that they are smart and black people are in fact not. And they are needed to interpret our struggle, to define our struggle, and that clearly is not the case, because Blog Talk Radio with Ralph Pointer and Betty Davis put that lie to rest. But we have to be cognizant of the fact that these warlords are moving us closer and closer to World War III. And now, since the election of 8 terms of Barack Obama, in which blacks, working class black people, have been moved closer to the center because of the first black president. And now we have a black Secretary of Defense. We have a black woman at the UN. And you can imagine what these images convey to the rest of the world. We have to be vigilant. The world is organizing against this lockdown and mandated vaccine, and just recently a young clerk was shot by someone who went to the subway station, and the man was told to put on his mask. He refused. He went home, got a gun, came back, and he shot the 20-year-old clerk. And we're going to see more and more of that. And the Democrats want to distract us from what they are doing, pushing us closer to war by concentrating on Donald Trump. And he continues to be the enemy in the media, even though he has been out of office for 7 months. It is a politics of divide and conquer. It is a politics of identity politics, and this nonsense that we have to go through, a distraction from the dangerous war game and war strategy of the imperialist warlords represented by the U.S. Pentagon, pushing us closer into a confrontation with China and with Russia. It's not going to work. China will not take this lion down. It is a power to be content that the U.S. has to contend with. And this post-supremacy world that the U.S. Pentagon talked about in a report of several years ago that appeared in Stars and Stripes, they are trying to reset their hegemonic role, their global dominance, full spectrum dominance in the world. It is too late for that. And these war games are dangerous, and we must organize against it. And as Frederick Douglass said, not anybody else, we need to educate, agitate, and we need to agitate and organize. That's what we need to do. And thank you very much for giving me this time.
Yeah, don't go away, Nelly. I'd like to continue this. One of the things you were talking about, the deal, the money deal that United States undercut France on, was United States is going to sell atomic submarines to Australia when Australia had a deal with France to be supplied with electric diesel silent subs. The French didn't know anything about it until it came out in the newspaper, and they withdrew ambassador from the United States. Vaccines and money. It's about money. And one of the things next on this program, we're having someone come in and talk about the vaccine in Cuba and what they have done on their own, even though the Americans have boycotted them in every way. And as far as WBAI, you're perfectly correct, Nelly, and we must do something about it. We are here in New York. It will not stand. And we must remember, when we speak of Mr. Trump's power is the history of racism in America. It is still true. To become popular in America, one must holler, nigger, nigger. And when Mr. Trump says...
True. We have to remember, in terms of fascism, we remember the oligarch's attempt to assassinate FDR at the time of the great the collapse of Wall Street. That was a plan initiated by the oligarchs of this country, and the agent whom they approached to do the assassination refused to do it and, in fact, exposed the plot. So fascism in the U.S. has been around for a long, long, long time, and it didn't start with Donald Trump. And the history of fascism goes back to Mussolini and Italy, and the word fascism, I understand, comes from an Italian word. I can't remember it now, but we must not jump to the analysis of the corporate media here who always lie to us, and I'll never forget Glenn Ford mantra, don't believe a word that they say. But these are dangerous, dangerous times as these warlords are pushing us toward World War III.
We must educate ourselves, and this program is a part of our education. And thank you so much for that, Nellie Bailey. You understand that the words that you bring us are very educational, and we must absorb them, and we will continue listening and learning on this program. And Sister Betty, will you?
Thank you, Nelly. I just hope you have a few more minutes to hang in here because I know many people will want to respond to all that you said. But at this point, we've got Brother Daoud hanging in the wings there, and we want to bring him out. But Zul is in the lineup. So, Brother Zul, your mic is open, and I know you have a lot to say.
Well, I'll keep it very brief to give people an opportunity, but thank you so much, Sister Betty, Brother Ralph, Sister Nellie, and Brother Joel. It was so interesting to hear all of that background on Afghanistan. Ralph and I talked months ago around the time of the inauguration about how many, so many of our activist groups are siloed one from another. We were speaking specifically about Julian Assange and Mumia Abu-Jamal and how the camps were really very unfamiliar with one another, that many of the people involved around Julian and Mumia didn't know about each other. And here we had two great truth tellers. We have two great truth tellers, and they are political prisoners, and they are in the same boat. So we came to the understanding that we have to build coalition. We have to connect the dots between issues and causes and build coalition. And we had a day of engagement this past Sunday, the 19th, in Foley Square, down by the courthouses, Thomas Paine Park. Some of the listeners may know that it was Thomas Paine who got the common people moving in the revolution. In his pamphlet, Common Sense, in 1776, he said, "We have it in our power to begin the world over again." Well, we still do. And we have to, because the common people didn't win the revolution, but we are rising together. So this group is an ongoing one now. We have an expanded mission, and we're going to have another event sometime in the near future, perhaps in the winter or early spring. But we're now part of an international group called World Beyond War, and we're called New York City Rising Together for a World Beyond War. You can find us at risingtogether.info. And we call ourselves whistleblowers for justice, people, and planet. Just to conclude, our understanding is that we're going to win when we're all for one and one for all. So talking about Afghanistan, Joe Biden, of course, lied to us. He said in the same breath that he's ending the war in Afghanistan, but we're going to maintain beyond the horizon capability. So no more boots on the ground, but more B-52s in the air, and more drones. And as Daniel Hale showed us, 9 out of 10 of the people killed by drones, those targeted for assassination, get it wrong, as they did immediately after the frantic escape attempt at the airport. They killed 10 innocent women, children, and men. So today, we really were in the streets in and around the UN. I was out with several young Afghanis, Afghani-Americans, and American vets of the American war in Afghanistan and Iraq, and we managed to slip through the checkpoints, and we got right to Biden's limousine just as he was leaving, and we caused quite a ruckus. We demand that the United States allow these refugees to come here and the Haitian refugees to here. What a horror they're doing to these Haitian people who for 8 months across so many nations, they gathered under this bridge in Texas and we're sending them right back. And we're happy to associate with the Democrats more than the Republicans. Please, we must rise together. So many things to do, so many groups, but we've got to come together and understand that there's urgency around all of these issues. But it's only through building coalition that we're going to do it. Risingtogether.info. We're going to update that website soon, and we'll let you know about the upcoming events. But what we hope to do more than anything else is not more webinars, but in the streets, out in the streets, with all the groups who need so much help, from COVID to climate chaos, from the Amazon rainforest to the Amazon workers, from Palestine to the Philippines. We are going to end these endless wars, and we're going to rise up together. risingtogether.info. I'm Zul, and I'm a whistleblower for justice, people, and planet. Thank you, Sister Betty, Brother Ralph. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you so much for that, Zul. And we must understand when we talk about defeating this evil empire, together is the way to do it. And the fact that we have chosen Mumia Abu-Jamal and put it together with Julian Assange, great truth tellers. And this is why they're both in the death camps of America. The truth is not to be told, and we are going to tell it, and we are going to put the organizations of those who want truth tellers together. Marie Boleyn, Aunt Anna Boleyn Montez, is a part of that. She told the truth of what the American government was doing to the Cuban government while she was employed by the American government, and that's why she is in the death camp. So we have these truth tellers, these truth activists to support. And I could go on, but I'm going to stop myself, or Sister Betty is going to stop me, because we have Daoud Andre to give us the up in what's happening down in Del Rio, Texas, and in Haiti, and with the French, American, British government, and I'm going to let Daoud tell it.
Well, I hope he will make an announcement first about his program on Saturdays. I believe he says it's from 2 to 4 on BAI. Apropos of what Sister Nelly was saying about the bleach effect that's going on at WBAI. Brother Daoud, your mic is open, and well, thank you for taking time. We know you had a fabulous demo and protest today, so we appreciate you taking the time at this late time.
And I must say, on behalf of WBAI, we have been approached for a Wednesday evening program. I believe we will take them up on that. You'll hear more about it in the future. Brother Daoud, the mic is yours.
I also want to say New Orleans is in the house, and we definitely got time. We extended our program so that we could get their report. It's a very urgent report. So those of you from New York City, please hang in there. I know it's a late hour for you, but please hang in there. Brother Daoud, you're welcome.
So thank you, Ralph. Thank you, Sister Betty. And also greetings to the family on the line and listeners, and especially Sister Nelly. Yes, so the program is Haiti, Our Revolution Continues, and it's been on WBAI since mid-July of this year. And WBAI had invited me to do a program on Haiti, and, you know, we thought about it and all the politics, like what Nelly was speaking about, but we realized also the importance of sharing information from a Haitian perspective. And it's always been something that had bothered us over the years that in a place like New York with so many Haitians, that BAI, well, supposedly a progressive radio station, that, you know, supposed to respect communities, people of color, and it was a white man doing a program on Haiti. That's for another day. But it's 4 to 6 p.m. every Saturday. It's called Haiti, Our Revolution Continues, and we encourage family to listen. Today we had a demonstration at the Grand Army Plaza from 3 to 6 p.m., it was COMOCODA, the Committee to Mobilize Against Dictatorship in Haiti, Haitian Women for Haitian Refugees, Flamboyant Haitian Literacy Project, and the UNIA, that's Universal Negro Improvement Association. We got together. This was an emergency demonstration because the whole world, you know, he has been looking at these images, thousands and thousands. We are told about 15,000 refugees under this bridge in Texas out in the open, you know, exposed to the elements. And it's men, women, children, like babies, you know. And there is a friend that someone we knew in Haiti, she's there with a six-month-old baby who is the last communication we had. She told us the child had a fever. The child was sick. She didn't have any more milk, so she was not really able to feed this child. And Joe Biden, on Saturday, he signed this, we can call it a decree, an order, for Border Patrol we call them the slave catchers, to go after these people in a brutal, brutal kind of way. And images that came out yesterday, what happened on Sunday, I guess the whole world has seen them, slave catchers on horses with their cowboy hats and their whips, you know. They say it's the reins for the horse, not the whip. And when you launch it against someone, as we see in the video, and we see what's going on, what's the difference between the whip and the rein for the horse? That's what we would ask the U.S. government. But anyway, today it was two things. We were there to, first of all, denounce the U.S. government, the racist U.S. government, and to point out that Democrat or Republican, Republican or Democrat, same garbage, you know? And it's sad, the amount of people who took the lie that Joe Biden would somehow be more humane than Donald Trump. And what we had always said is that, yeah, Joe Biden, the Democrats are hypocrites. They're never going to come out and call Haiti, the African countries, a shithole. But they will treat it as a shithole, treat us, black people, as shitholes. And this is the reality that we have here. We have what everyone saw. So the other part of our reason for being there was to show our family under the bridge that they are not alone. And it's not just Haitians who are supporting them. And today at the protest, it was everyone. It was African Americans, it was other Caribbeans, it was Chinese, it was white Americans. Everyone was there, young people, the elderly, and it was really beautiful, that kind of message. What we are asking, really, the people passing by, the listeners of this program, is that, because a lot of us are confused about the immigration and, like, have a sense that they can't let all of them in. Yes, all of them need to be in. Why? Because these people from Haiti, from Africa, from Cuba, from Venezuela, Colombia, Chile, who were at the border, Mexicans, all of them, they are people that are leaving their countries because of U.S. policies. Because the U.S. has put these puppet governments in our countries who allow the U.S. and its allies to steal the resources of our countries with total impunity. So we want to make it clear to our brothers and sisters, like 15,000, 30,000, 50,000 Haitians or Mexicans or Nigerians or people from Mali who would come here are not going to take anything away from you, you know, and to understand that we all need to be in solidarity and to fight for justice, to fight for the U.S. to stop plundering our countries, to stop putting puppet governments, and to treat the rest of the world with respect. And until that is done, you know, you're going to continue to see this happen. So Joe Biden thinks he's going to get rid of these people, but the thing is there's another 15,000 behind them and another 50,000, 100,000 behind those until the U.S. changes its policy. So thank you, Ralph. Thank you, Betty. And I hope folks listening here tune in on Saturday, 4 to 6 p.m., for more information about we didn't get to speak about the earthquake relief efforts. Anybody who would like to donate, we encourage you to give to Haitian Women for Haitian Refugees. They have a project in the Nip region that was totally devastated. 718-462-0791. And the Vendredi en Batonnel also, we are raising money for all three areas. So people can reach me, 347-730-3620. So thank you, family, and we keep on keeping on. That's what we say, right?
Thank you so much for that, Daoud. Andre of the Komokoto, would you give us those two numbers once again, slowly?
Haitian Women for Haitian Refugees is 718-462-0791. And my number for the Batonnel Project is 347-730-3620.
Thank you so much for that. Let's remember that, and let's remember the number to contribute to Pacifica WBAI, because if he gets the message out, we have to put the money in. Nothing is free. So let's get back in Pacifica. Let's get back in WBAI, but let's put our money where our mouth is. We work twice as hard for half the money, but the money has to go for freedom. Nelly, I hear your voice. I'm sorry. All right. One of the things that we're going to do, continue with the tragedy that happened in Louisiana. I've been trying to connect with Sister Belinda Parker Brown. When the first hurricane hit, I didn't hear from her. Then the second one came. I didn't hear from her, so I reached out to my friend, Reverend Pinckney, in Benton Harbor, Michigan, to get in contact with Sister Belinda Parker Brown, to have her call us to see what's happening in Louisiana.
Sister Belinda, we opened up your mic, and we saw another 985 number. We opened that one up. I see another number. The last four digits are 6825. I don't know if that's the... someone that's part of the program. 917-6825, your mic is open. Did you want to say something before we go on?
Sister Betty?
Yes.
I'm not sure. I know one of them is Latoya. I want her
yes.
to just, right, can you hear me, Latoya?
Yes, ma'am.
Real quick. Okay, great. Awesome. Sister Betty, Brother Raph, thank you all so much for giving us this opportunity to come on your show tonight. What we're trying to do right now is get national news attention for this serious situation that's going on here in the state of Louisiana. You know, Louisiana is the spotlight right now. Louisiana been caught with their draws down. And what we're here to do tonight is expose even more serious allegations against the state of Louisiana. We're fed up with the treatment here. A lot of people are suffering, you know, even before the storm hit, you know, but now that the storm hit, you know, we're dealing with the aftermath here. But even before that, Sister Betty, I had reached out to you to let you know that we have a real serious problem where children are being abused, and that the high-ranking officials, the agencies that are supposed to protect children and that keep them safe from this type of harm, and none other than sex trafficking. We have received some very serious allegations that our children are being abused by high-ranking officials, you know, from the governor's office on down, and making serious allegations of sex trafficking by leading officials, you know, in legislation, officers, mayors, you know, law enforcement, you know, it's serious, Sister Betty. So I want Latoya just to come on for a few minutes and tell her story, because to me, she's a hero. You know, she is the person that you know, to me, is the star in regards to the extreme that she had went to protect a child that alleged these serious allegations, and her life had been up on the fire, you know, because of her passion and her work to save and protect these children. Thank you.
Your mic is open.
Hi, how are you guys? Thank you.
Fine,
yes,
thank you, ma'am. Yes, we hear you. Speak.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I am a caretaker. I run a facility for children with mental illness. And for the past 8 months, I have been trying to report the exploitation, the sex trafficking, and sexual abuse of a child in my care that had started occurring when she was 5 years old. I went through all of the proper protocol and channels mandated as a reporter, reporting it repeatedly to Department of Children and Family Services, also to law enforcement, to no avail. No one would investigate it. They wanted to sleep under the rug. The reports went missing. Just no involvement, no interest in law enforcement or Department of Children and Family Services in undertaking the investigation. I reached out to Ms. Belinda at Louisiana United International because I became really alarmed after going through these reports. I personally was requested to speak with a sitting sheriff, and the sheriff asked me personally to allow the alleged abuser to come and have a sit-down conversation with the victim. I think that's for me when I realized that something was terribly wrong. And I don't even think then I realized how great it was, what we were exposing. My goal was just to make sure that we were reporting it and that someone is held accountable for the things that this child alleged. And I will go on the record saying that she's not the first child. She's the second child that I'm aware of. And so things just began to develop to where the child actually began to disclose more details about these sex parties and high-ranking elected officials that she could name by name, describe body parts of these officials, put them in the room where she performed oral sex on them at the age of 11, 12, 6, 8. She began to disclose locations that she had been taken to. One location, a really big hotel with really fancy carpet, and her remembering that it was by the Children's Museum, houses and different places that she had been to where they had had these sex parties where other children were there, but they were not allowed to talk and communicate with each other. And that the people would be in suits and uniforms. She recalls a time when she first started going to the parties that her mother would make her feel comfortable by saying, this one is a cop and you can do whatever he asks you because he's a cop. And the more and more we begin to disclose the things that she is reporting to us and trying to get DCFS involved, they refused to get involved. They refused to pick up the case and essentially told us that they were returning her to her abusers. That is kind of what freaked us out and caused us to start making a lot of noise. Someone has to listen because we were refusing to return her to these people. It got so serious that the abusers would come to our facility. They would send gifts to this child. They were stalking the facility. People looking, and mind you, this is a facility for 32 children. It got so bad that I took the child with me, and we were housed up in Baton Rouge for a week under armed guard that was provided to us through the NAACP, trying to get our governor's office involved, just investigated, and put a protective order in place so that her abusers cannot come and legally just pull her out of the facility. There has been no interest in DCFS or in law enforcement to do a true, full investigation into the matter until we brought it to LUI and into other directly to the governor's office.
You know, Georgia,
and even now, no one has not been arrested. Even now.
Wow. You know, Sister Betty, I know our time is short, but most importantly that, you know, Toya's job, you know, her profession requires her to mandate these reports and that, you know, once these serious allegations is made, you know, especially with these type of, you know, sex abuse and sex trafficking, you know, allegations, they're supposed to, you know, merit the investigation. We went all the way up to the Department of Justice, the FBI, you know, the state troopers, you know, everybody dropped the ball, and it wasn't until we began to expose this and put it out there for the world, you know, using our own social media outlets. And that's why you guys are so important to us tonight, is giving us the opportunity for our voices to be heard, that, you know, because there were high-ranking officials involved and that were named, you know, by this child, that, you know, the ball have been dropped. And you know what just happened there in New York with the governor there, that all it took was 11 women coming out making the allegations, you know, that, you know, merit the investigation. But here, it have taken over 8 months, almost 9 months, right, Toya?
Yeah, almost 9 months. We made our first report on January the 8th, and we've made 12 reports. 12.
Well, let me say this.
With everything documented, Brother Ralph, so thank y'all so much for giving us a chance. That, you know, you see what's coming out in the news with, you know, the FBI with these athletic girls, the you know, that basically they dropped the ball. So what we're saying is that our leadership is failing us, and it's not protecting our children.
Right. Well, we will hear more from you next week, I'm sure, and in the meantime, I will call you after this program.
I think it's important that you put some kind of contact information out for people who are on our program right now who want to follow up. I want to remind you again, Sister Ann Lamb has a wonderful listserv, and she puts information out that goes all over the country. And I think it's important that perhaps you call in on other programs. We've got to augment that. But if you want to give them some contact information, also, if you have a report that you have filed, if you email it to us, we will make sure it gets out there. Right, Ann?
Absolutely.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, that's what we need. We want national news, and we want CNN. We've been contacted all of these national news media, and we're saying that we're not going to be silent. We're not going to ask permission until we get these perpetrators arrested and put in jail with these serious allegations. And it shouldn't take us happen to be concerned about whether or not this child is going to be safe. You know, she should be protected from these type of crimes that have been going on in her life since she was 5 years old. And she's not the only victim. You know, there are many other victims that have tried to get help and did not get anything done, and they dropped the ball on them. So we want
Graham.
People to contact us. Yeah.
Give
we
us
want
the contact.
To contact us and support LaToya Porter. You know, I'm going to be able to talk to you offline, Sister Betty, and give you more information because LaToya needs support. You know, she's, you know, a beautiful young girl that wants to help these children. And we want, you know, we want to try to set up some type of support mechanism for her, you know, resources for her facility too as well. So on that note, I would like for people, I want to leave my phone number for people to call me. You can go to our website at LAUNITI, that stands for Louisiana United International, .org. My phone number is 985-503-0626. That's 985-503-0626. Thank you, Sister Betty and Brother Raph. I love you all, and I really appreciate what you do and whatever you can do to help us too as well here in Louisiana. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. Tune in next week and hear more, because we're going to be working on this. And so look forward to speaking to you all next week. Thank you again. Love you all. And in struggle, because this is an activist of radio. Activists. We do things. And thanks again. And
yes, we do.
Wonderful.
All right.